This is Catherine Foley, and today I'm with Marguerite Donlan, and we're having one of our conversations from the archive, and it's the 30th of October 2016. Margaret, thank you very much for coming along to this interview with me, and can you just introduce your, I suppose, first time entering the dance world?
Right, well, hello Catherine, it's lovely to be here with you, and thank you for your interest in my work and my life. So now, introduction to dance. It's kind of really one of those things where I don't know where the seed was sown, but it was always a passion. And although I didn't have a clue really what was out there in terms of dance, so of course I was sent off to Irish dancing like most kids in Ireland. And at a very young age, oh yes, that was my first introduction to improvisation, which was one of my big passions still, was as a very small little Irish dancer. And they had a category called the makeup dance. Mm-hmm. And this was I thought this was fantastic because I had a couple of, like there were some older girls who I really admired, one in particular. So I basically tried to copy her and then put in my own steps. And as I got older, then I was meant to learn, you know, set steps and do the proper slip jig and reel and... And I knew them, but I just remember thinking, oh, it's kind of boring. Mm. And at the Feshers, I know from my mother, and I remember it slightly being a small scandal, making up the dances, still making them up, doing a bit of the set step and then making it up. And then there'll be other parents going to the judges and complaining when I won, saying, they're not the steps. She's making them up. Mm. So I guess it was always a passion there to create and to make up things. The next thing that occurred to me as an Irish dancer was, I just don't feel comfortable with my arms here. There's something wrong. I mean, my arms are, surely they can express a lot. And at that age, I was also, you know, we had the World Book Encyclopedia collection. That's, you know, there was no internet. So under the letter B for ballet, it was completely worn out because that's where I learned all my information about what actually is ballet and dance. And so just looking at pictures and reading, I started to realize that there's more to movement. And then I started to create, like working with the Irish steps and then bringing in the arm movements.
And where were you at this stage?
In Longford. Oh, I must have been still, I was still young, like I was 9, 10. I even lied. I told people I was learning dance, ballet in Dublin. You know, and I was showing them what I was learning with my arms and the Irish footwork in the bottom.
And was your mother and father into dance?
Well, sort of. I mean, okay, little anecdote. My mother was always dancing around the kitchen. And from a very young age, I really honestly believed my mother was a film star. And I don't know why, but, you know, she was very extravagant and she loved these Hollywood movies, you know, these Hollywood musicals and stuff. And I remember sitting one day in front of the TV with my mother and I said to her, but Mom, when are you going to be on television? And then she looked at me and she goes, what do you mean? I said, aren't you in some of these films, these old, you know, these lovely... And she said, no, darling, I'm not. So that was the first kind of like, oh. So I guess, yes, there was that theatrical, yeah, movement thing, but as far as serious dance, or that just wasn't in the family. And also the idea to drive me up to Dublin once a week, they would have loved to have done that, but it just wasn't feasible. Mm-hmm. Longford, Dublin without a motorway. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, mm-hmm. It never really happened. So I had to contend with making it up and just, you know, figuring it out myself. Now, I think as a youngster, I was very involved in Scorn and Oak. So we did loads of set dancing, that was great fun. And then Sloga came about, and Sloga was great because they actually had a dance category. So I thought, oh, this is what I do. So I started choreographing. And the first piece was based on the Children of Lir. And so I must have been first year in secondary school, and I got all my sort of like mates from the gymnastics club or whoever could move. And I choreographed a piece, and we got to the All-Ireland, believe it or not.
And where did you go to school at this stage?
At Convent of Mercy in Longford. Mm-hmm. Now, this was before I started learning ballet with Annika. Mm-hmm. So this was all pre.
Yes, yes.
So just winging it, really. Mm. And I made the costumes and everything. Oh, it was just somehow in my blood, or just needed to do it. And we got a special. I think that was the second year. I think we drew. We actually drew, or did we come second? We either drew or we came second in the first year. And it was against a school that would have had ballet, full-time ballet, you know, in their school. Then the second year we drew, that's right, and I got a special award from the president, President Lynch. He awarded me with an originality thingy. Anyway, then I was going out of my head, basically, thinking, I need to learn, I'm starving. Mm. And thank God Annika and Philip fell in love in South Africa. And Philip Dawson's father died. He had to come back to take over the farm. And so Annika came with him, Annika Dawson. And they set up, she started teaching. So she put an advert in the newspaper. By then I must have been like going on 15. 14, going on 15. And she put an advert in looking, saying, ballet classes for children. And I called her and she goes, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 14 and a half. And she goes, oh, you're too old. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really begged. And I said, please, you have to, please. So she did. She actually then opened up, like, she had a class then for slightly older ones. And off I went. And it was just fantastic. And I think Annika, thank God, she saw the potential and the passion, and she said to my parents, we need to send her away to a proper school because it's now or never. And when I'm rambling on, just tell me to stop. So then a teacher from the Royal Academy of Dance, whose name is Dorothy Stevens, was over in Ireland examining, and Annika spoke to her about me and she said, I'll take her on. It was an experiment. So I actually never met the woman. But Annika told her about me, and she, on Annika's trust, she said, yes, it sounds really good. Send her to me. So Annika spoke with my parents, and my parents could see I was going to be really frustrated if I didn't have the opportunity to dance, mm-hmm. And to at least give it a go. So I packed my bags, at 16, and off I went to England to this woman, Dorothy Stevens.
And where did you live?
I lived with her and six cats. I have to say, I don't like cats anymore. So that was, oh my goodness, that was a real, real test of if you want to do this, you have to go through this very difficult situation. She was a spinster, extremely tough. I'd never had somebody living in her house before, and so she was overprotective. And I
so where did you train
with her? I mean, her ballet studio was right beside her home, but it was me who said, actually, I need to finish my education. I want to do my A-levels. My parents were like, oh, thank God. And it was nobody's idea. But even at that age, I wasn't dumb. I was kind of crazy, but I was sensible. So I thought, there's no point putting my eggs in one basket. So I did some A-levels, much to her disappointment, because she wanted me every minute of the day in the ballet school. But even when I was in the kitchen washing up or something, I would have to do relevés. And, it was just... and it was really hard because basically she made me do class with the grade ones. So they're little kids, 6, 7 years of age. They would go home. I would stay. Grade twos would come, grade three. So, as a 16-year-old girl, it was quite humiliating. And she would stop and say, now, Mandy, show Marguerite how to do a glissade. Mandy would be 9, So it was really hard. For my pride and everything. And then just believing, like, I am not good enough. It will never be good enough. And so because she played on that, it was like, you have potential, but I just don't think you're going to, So one day after 2 years, it was just before a big exam, I think it was my intermediate, Royal Academy of Dance Intermediate, she was just really at me. And bless her, it was her way. It was the only way she knew. But she just kept saying, are you going to do it as I wanted? And I said, I don't think I am, because I simply can't, you know, walked out. I think I was the first and only student that ever walked out of her class. But it was a great thing because it kind of burst the bubble, and we spoke afterwards and I said, you know, I have zero confidence. I just, you know, I've come from nothing and I don't have a background. And so when you tell me it's not good enough, I believe it. So for her, it was a kind of a revelation because she thought, well, that's how I was treated as a dancer. So I thought that would help you. And that was a big change. It was the first lesson in my life to kind of like, you need to talk to people before it comes to an explosion kind of thing, you know.
And did you continue to live?
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, at that point, I think there were so many wonderful parents within the ballet school, and they all sort of like offered rooms. So I was living with a lovely family at that time. Mm. But it was all good then, and I was with her for what? 2.5 years, 3 years. I mean, I did so much in this time, every exam and A-levels, and it was intense and great. And then from there, Dorothy got me permission to take class with English National Ballet, who were on tour in Bradford. So I went along and I was extremely shy and very kind of like, oh my goodness, intimidated. And so I was in the wings, on like hanging on some of the set scenery, whilst the dancers were on stage doing their class, and I joined in. And the teacher was Kevin Hagen at the time, who's been since then years with John Neumeyer in Hamburg, but he was the main ballet master for English National Ballet. And he saw me and he came over and he was like, "And who are you? And what's your name? And come tomorrow and bring your point shoes." So I did, and he worked with me every day for that week, as long as they were there. After class, he would work half an hour with me on point, and he was like always, And then they went to Manchester the following week, and he said, "Can you come?" So I had like 2 weeks really being exposed and had an enormous amount of wonderful attention, creative attention put on me. And I think he saw how much I sort of took in a short time. So then he said, "I'd like to talk to Peter Schaufers, our director, because you should really we need to get you down to London." So I was like, great, but it was just all, I was quite overwhelmed by it all. And then so they called me the next day and they said, "We don't have an apprentice situation, but we're going to create one. Will you come down to London?" And I said, "Yes." And then they called me back again. They said, "Look, to earn money, because you probably need money, right?" And I said, "Well, it would be good." I hated asking my parents for money. Not that they would ever begrudge it, but I just wanted to do this on my own somehow. So they arranged for me to be a dresser. So when they did their performances in the evening, because it was coming up to Christmas, so they had like two shows a day in Festival Hall, Nutcracker, I guess. And I would then be dressing and undressing the dancers for the quick changes and stuff. And then during the day, I was learning repertoire and taking class with the company. So for the rest of the dancers, they were like a little bit confused. "Are you the dresser or are you a dancer?" And I said, "Well, I'm not really sure." "I don't want to be a dresser, but I would love to be a dancer." And this went on for, it felt like a lifetime, but it might have been just 2.5-3 weeks. But not knowing where is this going and being terrified to even ask, you know, not feeling nobody there to sort of empower me to say, you can ask, like, what are your ideas? But that wasn't the case. And then one day they came after class to me and they said, "You've got rehearsal downstairs, bring your point shoes." So I went down and there was Peter Schaufers, the director. There was Betty Anderton, who's an amazing teacher, who's still with Royal Ballet now in London. Kevin Hagen and I don't know, a bunch of other people. And the pianist. And then I said, "Well, where are the other dancers?" And they were like, "Oh, no, it's just you." And so I had to do... I had two parts to learn. One, Symphony in C from Balanchine, and the other, Baader. So I had to do the whole thing on my own. And after I did it, they basically said, "Okay, you can breathe now." And they handed me a contract.
Great.
So that's how I got into the company. As you can imagine, then suddenly I was in the company. It was really hard to come in as, "Oh, the new dancer." It was like, "Oh, but you were the dresser, right?" So, you know, and then I had finally the chance to experience what other kinds of dance was out there, like contemporary dance, which is really where my forte lies. And we had Christopher Bruce at the time. He was a resident choreographer. And he sort of took me under his wing. Even Michael Clark came in, and they all could see that there was, that was more my thing, which was fantastic. And I did a lot in a very short amount of time, and I was promoted. And I was there for three years. And then Peter Schaufuss, the director of the English National Ballet, was invited to take over Deutsche Oper in Berlin. And he brought a bunch of principal dancers with him and me. And of course, that was...
What would you have regarded yourself as then? Would you not have seen yourself as one of the principal
dancers?
Well,
I wasn't a principal. I was a choreographer at that time. No, I'd have still regarded myself as little Maggie from Longford, you know.
He didn't obviously see you like that.
No, he didn't. No, he really saw my... I mean, that was the great thing about Peter. He really saw... He saw potential in people. Mm. He saw raw kind of gems. And he was very good at sort of getting them out. So the great thing is, when I went to Berlin, I went as a dancer, not as the ex-dresser. So it was a good... It was a fresh start. I didn't hesitate. And that's what I would say to a lot of people. Don't hesitate to take on an opportunity. You know, there are doors that open for you. Yes, you have to make a decision, but it's nearly always a good thing to just be courageous and go, even if you don't know. You know, the unknown is always fearful, but I think that's something I didn't never seem to fear. So off I went to Berlin, and I became a soloist then and did principal roles and soloist roles. And that's when I started choreographing.
So when you said you'd have done these serious roles when you went to Berlin, would this have been the classical ballet roles?
I did both, which was fantastic. One of my favourite classical roles was Olga in Onegin from Cranko. And Undina from John Neumeier, the main role. But of course, that was not so classical. That was going a bit more into the sort of modern, the John Neumeier style. But then I worked with people like Meg Stewart or Stephen Petronia. Michael Clark again came over. Killian, of course, Yuri Killian was a big key for me, and we became very, very good friends and close, artistically close together. And in a way, he was, I always call him my mentor, in a way. He was like a mentor. So it was fantastic. So I was exposed to a bunch of wonderful choreographers, Forsyth as well, and started creating then myself. There was, I think the first piece I did, it was an opportunity given to all three theatres, three ballet companies in Berlin, because there were still three at that time, Deutsche Oper, Komische Oper and Staatsballett. And so the premiere was in the Komische Oper, which is a fantastic theatre. And I did a piece called Celtic Touch, and that's where I worked with an Irish band, and Owen Moore, who is an Irish film director, he was doing his final film in the film school in Berlin, and he wanted to create a documentary, kind of artistic documentary film, heard about me through the Irish band, and so he basically followed the whole, he documented the whole, that's something I should get for you guys, he documented the whole sort of making of, and then the performance on stage in the premiere.
Wonderful.
It is, because we both started out together, and he went his way, and I went, he's still in Berlin, so we're still in touch, absolutely. And so from that moment, it was actually made into a film. I think RTE did show it a couple of times, maybe hundreds of years ago. And from that time on, I was creating constantly, at least once a year. Maybe sometimes I would create a solo for somebody just for the hell of it, you know, but that side was really important for me. And still dancing. So I was doing both. And then there came a point, where I could feel that the balance was tipping. There was this inner, the growing need to do more creative work. I suppose when it became a little bit boring at the Deutsche Oper, when there wasn't enough creativity there for me, I started to create more myself. So it was as a result of...
So did you start creating more for yourself, for yourself?
No, actually, I found it always... I mean, I did sometimes when I didn't have... when I didn't have somebody to work with. But there was always some... There was always somebody who would... One of the dancers who would come and say, will you create something for me? I found it more interesting to create on somebody else.
And obviously they had this faith in you. And they knew you could do it.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I mean... One piece, We Three Sheep, which actually had a big success, I did dance it myself, only because at the last minute something changed. I think one of the dancers was sick. Now, the thing is, the reason I didn't like to create it myself was because I knew I couldn't. I just, because I love improvising. So what I did was I fixed the beginning, I had a middle and an end, and the rest I just left free. And that was my challenge and my task. Oh, yeah. I mean, as a choreographer in the beginning, it was very much, you know, like the very first piece I did, it was all set and clear, you know, and all on the counts, all done before. I'm completely different now. Mm. It's just great, though, you have to go through that process, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the
And then you move from there?
From
that position?
As a dancer.
As a dancer, yes. As a choreographer?
Well, I was 12 years or 11 years with the Deutsche Opera as a dancer. And towards the end, like I said, I was already getting commissions from other companies to come. And it was, we had an intern director who was not too happy about supporting me or anybody else who were working on their second career, which is a shame. But it kind of made me make a decision. And I said, you know, I need to put all my energy, my strength in my creative work now. And I'm just going to go for it. Of course, people were like, oh, you're going to give up a really good job. And, you know, did you think about money? And I said, well, I'd rather really follow my passion and where my energy is taking me. I mean, I didn't have a family or children, so there was no reason to be scared about, you know, about security. And so I just, well, actually... During this time, this really thinking, trying to make this decision, I got, for the first time in my life, the first and only time in my life, I got a little eye infection, which is called pink eye or something. So the doctor put a patch on my eye and he said, obviously, you know, you can't dance. And so I was at home and I thought, well, yeah, but I could be getting on with the concept for a new piece and da-da-da. So I was working and then the other eye got it. So I was sitting with two eye patches on, forced to think.
Yes.
And that was it. I made a decision and I never came back to the Deutsche Opera. I went in to say, I need to go now. I need to leave. And then
you were brave.
Or stupid. I don't know. But I think I wouldn't have done it another way. I was determined to just follow. I just felt, and the other thing is I never wanted to, as a dancer, go past my sell-by date, you know? I wanted to stop at the top. And I also didn't, because it wasn't fulfilling at the Deutsche Opera at that time as a dancer. And I honored my art and I loved it so much that I didn't want to leave in a, in a way that it didn't have a good memory.
So can I ask you, you said you wanted to leave at the top. What was that last performance?
Oh, actually the last performance was... Oh, I'm not really proud about that. The last performance was a piece from Yuri Vamosh, Romeo and Juliet. I wasn't Juliet and I wasn't Romeo. It was the most fun part, but and it was a part where he actually said, he saw me on stage and he goes, that one over there, let her improvise. She's great. You know, much to the dismay of his assistant who was doing everything exactly, you know, when you're reproducing a piece, it has to be exactly on the counts and exactly right. So I had fun, but it was no amazing thing. No, I think previous to that would have been like the Killian stuff. And it's a very good question. I don't know what I did just before that, but they were satisfying.
So your favorite piece during that time performing, what was it?
I loved performing Undina from John Neumeier. I just was like, this is so made for me. Mm. It's the mermaid, mm. you know, and the tail gets, she cuts off her tail and it's like learning to walk again. And so it was a dramatic part. It was a lot of strange movements. And that, I think, was probably the most satisfying.
So when you left, what did you do?
When I left? Well, yes. Honestly, you know, talk about karma. I think the second week after I made that decision, I got a phone call from Hubbard Street Dance Company in Chicago asking if I would create a new work for them. And 2 days later, Netherlands Dance Theatre called me and asked if I would create a new work for mm-hmm. them. So, you know, that was immediately a kind of a reassurance that you did the right thing. Mm-hmm. Just go on, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was very exciting because I thought,
what did you create then?
So, in... Oh, well, the piece... I don't know which piece came first. I think it was in Chicago. I think I went to Chicago mm. first. That was the first... Oh, yeah, but that was 9/11. Mm. I was in Chicago just, you know, the day after I landed, then 9/11 happened. Oh, that was a very strange time. So I had plans to do another piece. I went there with a certain concept, an idea, and then when this all happened, everything changed. Mm. And I was like, I can't do my original plan because it's just... Mm. So I did a piece called Deconstruct. Gosh, what was it called? Something like Deconstruction. Mm. So it was, I mean, it definitely had the effect of 9/11 on me in a personal way. If you were to look at it, yeah, I could point out mm. where those parts were. But looking at the piece, it was just a piece. They had a lot of success with it. They ran it a lot. And then the piece for Netherlands Dance Theatre was a piece called Bebop. To be Bob or not to be Bob. Everybody wanted to be Bob. And it was the second company, so they're the younger ones. And, oh, God, they were amazing. They were just, like, so... But it was quite intimidating. I mean, it was an evening with a new piece from myself, but a new piece also from Yuri Killian. Mm. So, you know, I was working along my mentor and my master and my... But somehow, you know, once I'm in the studio, none of that doubt is there. Mm. The doubt is always before and after, or the questioning, which I think, you know, I embrace it as an energy that just makes you go on. It's not destructive questioning, it's just questioning. But that was a wonderful experience. Being amongst these super talented young people and just in this institute itself and having Yuri there.
And would you say he's been the most, I suppose, influential person on your style?
No, I wouldn't say on my style, no. But as a person, I love how he works with people. It's just it was a kind of a confirmation of my beliefs in how to create work creatively and work with people, because when you're working creatively, it's about helping them empower themselves to get the best out of it, to create something unique and wonderful together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I'm going to create for you and you're going to do as I tell you. Mm-hmm. Yuri is not like that. It's a real it's a combined work of art, and you feel great as a person working with him, and as an artist you feel really celebrated and very charismatic. So, you know, it was like, this is my world, and this is... So that was Yuri.
Because it's very interesting, you work with many different companies now, like the Bolshoi, etc. It's quite extraordinary, actually, Margaret. So looking at that, is that very challenging for you? And being freelance, having to go into different companies who may already... have different kinds of reputations, different kinds of styles, and then you come in and you create with them, collaborate with them. How do you find that?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, I loved having my company. Absolutely. Mm. I mean, the first 2 years, just learning to be a leader and to be a boss was super painful. But I did seek professional help from a consultant and, you know, coach and mentor type of thing, because yeah, you have to learn how to be good, you know, you just need to. So but having a company and again seeking raw talent and just giving opportunity and seeing people strengthen and grow and the connection with the audience, I loved all that. And I you know, one day I would like, what I miss is the team, the whole building, you know, networking and stuff. However, it's good to take a break sometimes, because when you're running a company, you're just running, you know, it's taking every second of your time. So you sometimes don't have a chance to look left and right. And you need that time as an artist just to kind of reflect a little bit. Or even just space to absorb, you know. So that's why it was crucial for me after 12 years being in Saarbrücken to just take a different standpoint. Going into different companies is very refreshing, because you're constantly working with new talents, new impulses, and that's really nice. And then you don't get stuck in your habits, because I'm like constantly, it's all about breaking habits. How do you break the habit? And of course, I mean, you don't have to stress about, you don't have to worry about, you know, are the tickets selling? You know, you just go in, you do your piece, and you create, and it's great, actually. However, there are those things missing, because I did love to. What I do miss is the audience. I loved building up an audience, like who's missing in our audience? How do we get them into the theatre? I realized that this was a thing I could do very well. I had a big passion. I think it's because of, I have a big passion just for people in general and sharing. So, but freelancing is exciting. So going from somewhere like the Bolshoi to the Friedrichstadtpalast, it's, you know, although the dancers in the Friedrichstadtpalast are classically trained, but it's a different world. I love that. I actually love it. Or the dancers in Visceral Dance Company in Chicago, very contemporary. Oh, it's that for me. This is the best part of it, about freelancing, and something that I'm proud that I have not said, oh no, this is my path, and that is only. I'm not a purist. I suppose you could say that and to create something, I will use language. I will use whatever I feel is right to bring over what we want to say, as long as it feels truly correct in an artistic, with an artistic integrity behind it. So yes, at the moment I'm really enjoying this multifaceted, and also having time to like come to Limerick and like this workshop yesterday. This is so exciting to see more than like 50 dancers,
yes,
with some men as well. That was great. I don't know, just.
And can I ask you, the works, you've donated a lot to the National Dance Archive of Ireland, which is absolutely wonderful. So thank you very much for that. But if you were looking back at those works, is there any one for you that is a particular favourite?
No.
Do you love them all?
No, I would try to say in a healthy way, I appreciate lots of aspects about all of them. And I will always be critical, you know.
I know, yeah.
Yes, it's normal. I think something like Frida Kahlo, this was a piece that, I mean, I read and watched and looked at everything there was possible to read and about Frida Kahlo, so I really felt like I knew this woman, and so in doing this piece, you try to channel with that person and say, well, I honestly want to do this very respectfully. I'm not Mexican, I don't pretend to be, and I'm and so I did a very, in a way it's a very quiet piece. And so I'm really proud about this piece because it was an incredible success. I mean, we ran it for 3 years. Instead of having just 15 performances in Saarbrücken, we had to run it, like, it was just sold out all the time. And then it went on an Asian tour, and I was like, this will be curious, you know, because Asian audience were not really familiar with Frida Kahlo, but the promoters were like, we really want to do this. And that was very exciting to see how a Korean audience was just like, they went crazy for it. and a Chinese audience mm-hmm. in Macau. So I suppose that's the piece that I did with such a silence and respect in my heart, and not as I never really think about the audience, except I think about their emotional, how they're going to feel emotionally. I'm not thinking, I want to do a piece that makes the audience happy. I want to do a piece that I feel they're really going to understand and be with me, mm-hmm. or with us. Anyway, so Frida Kahlo, yeah, Casa Azul it's called. And I suppose Romeo and Juliet is special because I just found out I was pregnant. So, I don't know, that was just... That was a special time. Mm-hmm. And then Sakura. Mm-hmm. So my child was born. I was breastfeeding and listening to this music on headphones. And this is such an aggressive music. It's so sexually aggressive and boom, boom. And they were just not my feelings at the time. I just didn't have, you know. So that was an interesting piece because I had to pull out of me from other places. Mm-hmm. This feeling. So it was almost done through my head. Mm-hmm. And so there was a really enlightening experience to see that there are so many ways to create a piece. Mm-hmm. It's not just from, we always talk about, you know, you can't only create on your own experiences. That would just, you know, just not enough. But this was something else. I couldn't even reach out into anybody else's sexual aggressive energies. It had to be a head thing. And yeah, it worked. I really liked the piece.
Because all of those pieces are so diverse. They're so very different.
Oh, yeah.
It's so very wonderful. So that makes me think, is there a kind of a Marguerite Donlan style?
I think the movement is what brings it together. Yeah, I don't know. I'd love some... my dancers will always say, it's totally Donlan-esque. Or, you know, I should ask them. But... I think the movement, now that's a good question. I don't know. I'm a dreadful analyst.
Well, as you say, maybe it's up to other people.
Yes.
To write about that in years to come.
I think what does connect my pieces are the human aspects. I think it's very much, there's always this, I've heard now thinking of people say, it touches, or there's always a human aspect to it. Even with Sakura, you know, it was based on cubism, Picasso, being able to see front of another, same time, and still the story of Sakura. And I didn't want a victim. Oh, that's the thing. Another thing, I'm very, you know, support the women. I wanted the woman to be the one who sacrificed herself, a bit like Mother Teresa, who says, I give my life to save a lot of people. So in this version, the female dancer puts herself forward. She's not pushed forward. Mm. I think all of those story ballets I've done, they're all stories that feature women. So Carmen was the first. So women have always been pulled out. Giselle Reloaded. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I just couldn't make her a victim. I wanted to give her the choice. And at the end, she kind of wakes up after that. It's like it's a whole dream, and she's just about to sort of to kill herself through this madness. And then she makes the decision, no, because of my broken heart over this man who has jilted me or whatever. No, I am not going to take my life. I am not. So I always try to empower my women in my pieces.
It is empowerment, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. How wonderful.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
So where will you go from here?
Like, literally?
Dance-wise.
Dance-wise. Let me see. I've got quite a few commissions coming up. What I really am enjoying more and more are these sharing my experiences. I also did, a coaching accreditation a couple of years ago, so I'm starting to combine my artistic creative work in the coaching world. So working with corporate worlds, dancers, whoever. Again, it's all about helping them to empower themselves or sharing with people, especially in the corporate world, how to be creative, you know, how to start from blank, how to think outside the box, Because that's what we're constantly doing as an artist, and that's what I absolutely love. Give me a blank canvas and I'm the happiest. If I have to recreate, like when somebody wants to have a work of mine, I can't teach it. I just start, you know, recreating it. So I always have to work with an assistant. I mean, I could if I really wanted to, but I find it very difficult to just recopy what I did before. So
that's because you've moved past it.
I guess so. It's hard to go back. So, but I appreciate it, and I wouldn't want to change it. Like, I'm happy that somebody else teaches it, and then I will go in when the base, when it's basically there, and I'll retwig it, and I'll twig it onto the person, so that that dancer feels that the dancer can own it. Exactly. And that's what we did with the Bolshoi. And then, you know, obviously if there's a couple of dancers that inspire me, I will go, oh, you know what, we'll change the solo. Let's just do a new thing. That's fine too. But yes, I'm really interested in emerging my creative world with also this sort of, And I'm thinking I might do a PhD.
Oh, go for it.
It
would be wonderful.
I'm just excited about... I need 10 years to go backwards, you know.
To reflect on what you've actually done.
No, just because I'm getting older. No. we've stopped the clock for a while. I think it's exciting to see. You know, that's the thing. When you're running a company, you're so focused on that. And because if you want to do a brilliant job, that's all, you know, you have to be really, really focused. And now I feel like I'm slowly coming out of a space. And of course, you know, I lost my husband tragically 3 years ago.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I feel like I have been in a dark place for a while because of that. We just had the 3rd year anniversary. It was a tragic car accident. And it's something that's part of my life, so I don't not share it. But of course that has had an impact as well, of course. But being the type of person I am and knowing my husband, he would insist that I try to also find the positive aspect, impact on it. So it's a chance to see things in a different light.
Well, thank you so much for this interview. I wish you well. I'm delighted you're with us for this Irish-German Connections and Motion Conference. We'll show a film tomorrow for the National Dance Archive. Excerpts from your work, which we're delighted to do, and we're so looking forward to presenting on your work and talking about it further. So, Margaret Donald, thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine.